This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hello and welcome to Star Diary, the podcast from the makers of BBC Sky at Night magazine. You can subscribe to the print edition of the magazine by visiting skyatnightmagazine.com or to our digital edition by visiting iTunes or Google Play.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome to Star Diary, a weekly guide to the best things to see in the Northern Hemisphere's night sky. But as we're based here in the UK, all the times that we'll be giving are in GMT. In this episode, we'll be covering the coming week from the 7th to the 13th of November. I'm Ezzie Pearson, the magazine's features editor, and I'm joined on the podcast today by reviews editor Paul Money. Hello, Paul.
Hello there, Ezzie. Looking forward to some more events.
Absolutely. So, Paul, what are your recommendations for this week?
Well, we had quite a good session with the evening sky last week. So Let's start the week with the morning sky. You know, that really, really strange time when everybody should be asleep, curled up in bed, especially these colder nights. But, Well, if we're astronomers, we'll get out at any time of the night. Well, that's the theory anyway, unless you turn off your alarm and go back to sleep, which is what I sometimes do, unfortunately. However, on the 7th, we look at about 3 o'clock in the morning. I think this is well worth getting up for. Now, to be fair, you could have started the next morning. So it's one of those things that, you know, it depends on where you wanted to do this. But we look at Ceres. Now, this is the dwarf planet Ceres, magnitude 8.8. So it's not bright. But the reason why I picked out is that it's actually passing through the Leo triplet of galaxies. This is why it's in the morning sky. Leo is in the morning sky at the moment, sort of thing. So you have to be up, I say, about 3 o'clock is probably the best time. Leo is well up by then, so it's not low down in the murk, sort of thing. It's well up. And so have a look, because you'll find it below the galaxy NGC 3628. Now, that's the fainter member. I always think it's slightly larger on photographs, and sort of like it's parallel to the motion of Ceres as well. And then you've got, like, if you look at it with binoculars, which is very difficult, you can't see them easily with binoculars. But, you know, the orientation is sort of like the galaxy is sort of like trending from upper right to lower left. And then the other two galaxies that form the triplet are M65 and M66. Now, all these galaxies are not exactly bright. I mean, M65 is Mag 9.6 and M66 is 9.7. And that other galaxy, well, that's a 10.41. But when you've got a Mag 8.8 dwarf planet passing through them, this is the time to capture it. And hopefully you can do it visually and also do it photographically and get a sequence showing it moving through the actual field as long as the sky is clear. Now, we've estimated that, in actual fact, Ceres is closest to the galaxy core of NGC 3628 around about 3 a.m. on the 7th, which is why I chose this particular time. And then the next morning, it lies to its east-southeast. So it is a good project, really, for astrophotographers. And it's fascinating for us, night after night, or should I say morning after morning, to actually follow the motion of this world as it passes through this triplet. Because it's not often you get these interesting objects involving deep sky targets as well. Often they look like a dot. Ceres will just look like a dot. But then you've got these galaxies, and you'll see this one dot moving past these galaxies, which I find actually fascinating. So that Ceres, and I say it's not often we've mentioned Ceres recently because it has faded, but this is one of those chances. This is the time to do it. So November the 8th, well, we get around to the full moon. Full moon occurs on the 8th. And on that evening, we find it actually fairly close to Uranus. It's several degrees to the left of Uranus itself. And we're looking about, well, say 7 p.m. in the evening sky. Now, full moon is technically at opposition. It is opposite the sun in the sky. That's why we get it full. So with Uranus being so close, it does follow that in actual fact, Uranus should be close to opposition as well. And indeed it is. It is at opposition the next day. So they're literally probably less than 24 hours apart from being at opposition together. So I find that fascinating. It's not often you get this situation where the moon is really close to a planet and they share the same opposition date near enough. So 8th and 9th there for the moon at full and then Uranus at opposition. And Uranus is technically naked eye, he says, laughing. Yes, it depends on your eyesight. It also depends on your clarity of the sky. You know, there's so many things that can affect this. But if you've got dark skies, it's worth, and if you've got keen eyes, worth having a look. Just inevitably, you need good charts. Check in the magazine for the chart sort of thing. You should be able to pick it out if you've got good keen eyesight and you're very sensitive at night sort of thing. When I was younger, many, many moons ago, I could see it with the naked eye. I have to say now with glasses, I can't. And she's saying, but it doesn't take much. Binoculars, even low magnification binoculars, will actually bring out Uranus extremely well. It is magnitude 5.6. So I say it's well worth seeing. Like Neptune, it is small in the disk. And there are subtle shadings that some people have reported and astrophotographers have reported. But the other thing with Uranus as well is that now it's rising, you know, sort of thing, as the sun sets and setting as the sun rising. It's visible all night. So this, if you want to have prolonged observation of it and you've got a clear horizon, follow it from sort of rising through to setting, then have a seek out for the moons. It's got five moons that are visible. Now, it depends on the size of the telescope, but you should be able to pick out Oberon and Titania and Ariel reasonably easily. I would say an 8-inch telescope at least, but Umbriel and Miranda are the harder ones. Umbriel because it's fainter and Miranda because it's fainter, but it's very close to the disk as well. But well worth having a go at sort of thing. It took me a while before I eventually got them. I always remember I had a little chat. Well, I did what everybody else did. I wrote to Patrick. I wrote to him and asked him, had he seen the moons of Miranda, the five, and he typed a classic. I've got the postcard back and it came back and it typed. Yes, indeed, I have with my 15-inch telescope. I've seen all of them, including Miranda. At that stage, I had my 14-inch telescope and I couldn't get Miranda. Umbriel was even hard, but I couldn't get Miranda at all. But I'm glad to say I now can get Miranda. So it's one of those things, but well worth having a look at if you've got a large telescope to have a go at tracking these down and photographing them as well. So that's Uranus on the 9th at opposition. So it's visible all night. Now, the moon was close by, as I said, on the 8th, and it will be moving on. And on the 9th, it lies between the Pleiades and Aldebaran. And Aldebaran, of course, appears to be part of the Hyades star cluster. We know they're separate. We know that Aldebaran is half the distance of the actual cluster itself, so it's nothing like as the distance. But the moon on the 9th lies between them. So I think I love that when they're sort of this conjunction sort of thing with deep sky objects like that. So that's the evening of the 9th. And so if you look carefully, you will notice two stars close to it. Now, for scientific reasons, these sort of events close to full moon are hardly ever picked up on because it is very difficult to get the data. But visually, there's no reason why you shouldn't try to get them. The two stars are 37 and 39 Tauri, and the moon will occult them. They're also known, by the way, as A1 and A2 Tauri, but I prefer to go with the numerals myself, 37 and 39. So the thing about this is that have a look at them. Start looking from 7:30 p.m. The easiest thing to do is find the moon. Because the moon will be getting close. And if you see two stars to the left at a slight angle, bingo, you've got the two stars. So watch as the moon covers them. It will be on the bright edge of the disk. I mean, this is nearly full moon, of course. It's just a sort of like 2 days from full. But the reappearance does occur on the dark limb. It's a very slim dark limb. But well worth having a go. You never know. If you see it, you're watching the motion of the moon, aren't you, Ezzy?
Mm-hmm. And will that be visible with the naked eye?
Not with the naked eye. The moon will be naked eye. That's a dead cert. But the stars, no. Binoculars, whether the moonlight will wash them out, I'm not sure, because I have actually forgotten the magnitudes of these. I think they're around about 5 or 6 magnitudes sort of thing. So technically the naked eye. But the thing is, if you use a telescope, you should be able to pick those two stars out. And 37 is slightly brighter than 39, and it's the more northern of the actual pair of stars. So, you know, just for fun, just have a go, see if you can see them. Getting the details for scientific research, they prefer it when the moon, in actual fact, is not at such a full phase. It's a lot harder to see them at full phase. But, I mean, I always like to have a go. You never know what you might be able to spot. So, the next evening, so therefore the 10th, The moon, then, is to the upper right of Mars. Now, Mars is steadily creeping closer to opposition. It will be next month. So he's getting brighter and bigger in a telescope as well. So the moon gives you a good guide on the 10th to be in the upper right of Mars. Then on the 11th, it lies to the left of the red planet. So about 9 o'clock for these. Allow them time to get a bit higher in the actual sky so that it's a lot easier to actually view. But as I say, we're getting excited because Mars is heading back towards opposition. We waited nearly 2 years for this. So astrophotographers like Damien Peach, etc., are getting some great pictures already. I'm not envious at all. Me envious? I'm not envious at all. No. Mm. Well, they are the experts, aren't they, in getting these pictures. Absolutely stunning. And to finish the week off, the moon then carries on from Taurus, because remember, Mars is in Taurus, and it moves into Gemini. And on the late evening of the 13th, it forms a triangle with Castor and Pollux, the twins that make up Gemini. But if you look sort of to the lower right of the moon sort of thing from Pollux, you can actually also see Kappa Geminorum, and the moon almost lies on a line between the two stars themselves. And that's around about 10 o'clock-ish. On that particular evening of the 13th, just to end the week's events off.
So, as you said, there are lots of things going on there. On the 7th of November, you've got Ceres passing through a triplet of galaxies in Leo at about 3 o'clock in the morning. And then throughout the rest of the week, you have the moon traveling by a whole range of interesting targets. You've got Uranus on the 8th, the Pleiades and Aldebaran on the 9th of November. From the 10th to 11th, it'll be near Mars. And finally, on the 13th, it'll be near Castor and Pollux in Gemini. So a great week for watching the moon as it travels across the night sky. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us about those, Paul.
It's a pleasure.
If you want to keep up to date with the best things to see in the night sky every week, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, and we hope to see you here next week.
If you want to find out even more spectacular sights that will be gracing the night sky throughout the month, be sure to pick up a copy of BBC Sky at Night magazine, where we have a 16-page pull-out sky guide with a full overview of everything worth looking up for. Whether you like to look at the moon, the planets, or the deep sky, whether you use binoculars, telescopes, or neither, our sky guide has got you covered with the detailed star charts to help you track your way across the night sky. From all of us here at BBC Sky at Night magazine, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Star Diary podcast from the makers of BBC Sky at Night magazine. For more of our podcasts, visit our website at skyatnightmagazine.com or head to Acast, iTunes, or Spotify.